Welcome to the Athenaeum Review, where we talk about the ideas that shape our world. I'm Ben Lima, and our guest today is Ludwig Schwartz, whose paintings from his desktop series of 2016 are currently on view at the Dallas Museum of Art. His work has been exhibited in many important solo exhibitions nationally and internationally, including, among others, here in Dallas, Conduit Gallery, Angstrom Gallery, Road Agent, and The Box Company. And he's been called quite possibly the most important painter who's lived in Dallas in the last generation. Thank you for being with us today.
Thanks, okay. Ben.
Yes.
It's great to be here.
Awesome. Well, so I wanted to start by asking you about the paintings, which are currently on view at the museum. And for the original exhibition at the Conduit Gallery, there was also a text that you wrote, Notes on the Desktop. And the overall title of the series, I believe, is Desktop. And I wanted to start by just asking if you could tell us a little about this kind of concept of the desktop that you have and how it plays out in your work.
Well, I would say it played out. I don't know if I'll continue working in that manner. Usually I find a context to exhibit sometimes paintings in the background or as a part of an exhibition. So the desktop for me at the time was working through these paintings and trying to find a position that I wanted to put them in. And I kind of juggled a variety of ideas and thought about the paintings, and they went this way and that way. Nothing really came to fruition until I decided, well, I'm going to put them on a desktop and work from that point of view of here are my paintings that will possibly do something. And so I set them up on the desktop with a variety of other things, signage, memes, topical things, and went from there. It was just, if you know, I think you've seen a few of my other shows involve painting, but it's kind of the idea of like kind of a going joke of the covert painting exhibition. I'll end up in Talus Thrift Shop, for instance.
Right.
Or they'll end up in a walk-in closet. I've done three shows with Conduit Gallery here in Dallas, and that's kind of how these shows worked. But they're always kind of floating around. Paintings are the quote-unquote art object for me in a certain way, like that references Joseph Kosuth, for instance, who talked about painting as a way to, I don't know, painting, well, let's just skip that part.
We can come back to that, actually. I mean, that's really interesting. And yes, for me personally, seeing, I guess, the series of shows at Conduit Gallery had been my introduction to your work over the last few years before, I guess maybe most recently before this, seeing the works on paper that were at the Box Company. But on that note, I also wanted to ask you about, I guess, the when I've seen, like the ones you mentioned, the Taos Thrift Shop and Walk-In Closet and so forth, seeing that the entirety of the exhibition, it's, you know, it all works together with all these different media. You know, for those who haven't seen, there's painting, there's video, there's sculpture, that sometimes performance, there's, you could say, multiple media or even intermedia that all are kind of creating an overall situation. But then at the same time, you know, here a couple of years later, at the museum, people here will only see the paintings, and maybe a lot of them were seeing that show at the gallery. So my question is, when you're creating the work, are you thinking about how you know, this piece might be seen just kind of as a single painting or as a series of paintings, but also seen as part of this larger environment? And how do you sort of relate that all together?
Well, I think when I paint in isolation, more or less. So I look at them as paintings first, or as fake paintings, or what have you, or things, making pictures, or just, it's kind of a bad habit I picked up a long time ago. And that's kind of a half joke.
What's the bad habit?
Painting. I mean, I dropped it for a while, and I got back in grad school, I stopped painting in a painting department full of painters, of course. I look at it this way. I make exhibitions specifically if I control the space. The paintings fit in a certain way, and I know exactly what I want them to do. The minute a painting leaves and somebody requests it for anything, it's no longer an exhibition of mine. So they can take a painting and put it elsewhere. It doesn't necessarily bother me, or I mean, if somebody took a painting of mine and put it in the context of a lot of, you know, what I may consider uninteresting paintings, that would probably be funny at best. But it's a curatorial choice, so I open myself up to that possibility. I've had a lot of feedback on these paintings, and I'm very gracious when it comes to, like, pats on the back, or I don't know you, but I really love your paintings. And it's nice, or the color is nice, or things like that. And it hasn't really crossed my mind, well, you don't really know me as an artist.
Right.
Because the museum wanted the paintings, and it's great that they're here, and it means a lot, but yeah. This isn't a Ludwig Schwartz exhibition. This is a museum exhibition that's, a way to display the paintings, so.
So, kind of following up, you mentioned Joseph Kosuth, who's certainly known for conceptual art and being one of the first people to really push into so-called conceptual art. And in a way, a lot of people might see conceptual art as opposed to painting, like in a superficial way. There's painting and then there's conceptual art. But clearly, if we're trying to understand what your work is, that either or kind of category doesn't seem to really fit. And there was this another aspect of your work that always grabs me, which is the humor. There's a lot of humor, which is really funny. And so this combination of, like, this is just off the top of my head, but kind of this combination of a conceptual approach, number one, and the use of painting as a medium, number two, and then the kind of humorous angle to a lot of it, number three. I think, well, somehow that all really fits together in a way that is really satisfying, or it's really, it kind of fits it all together in a really well integrated way. And I wonder if, am I on the right track there? Is that all legitimate aspects of your work, or is that the...
Yeah, it's like making chili.
Yeah.
I kind of, it's really what I do.
Yeah.
So.
Well, now it's funny that you mentioned that, because I was just looking at the catalog or projects that you did a few years ago involved brisket making the project objective. I think I wrote it down here. Objective to create one combination spice using only four basic spices and perhaps a preservative and anti-caking agent. Just so this is the kind of thing that you might bring in from time to time in your work.
Yeah. Well, I bring in my life.
Yeah.
To my work. Everything else, that they're just objects. So I have a tendency to, when I say make a chili, set a stage. And when I do an exhibition, I'd like to think that I have a goal in mind, and that is to, I used to think of it as business propositions that were guaranteed to fail. And if they somehow broke through, they would contain a lot of elements. And it's really more about they made it. Like, I was serious. I did that exhibition in New York City with a gallery called Sunday. That was the first iteration of the Four Seasons. And really, the whole idea of the exhibition, well, not the whole idea, but I wanted to bypass the structures of fame to get to a point where I could actually somehow sell the spice. Of course, I wasn't realistic about it, but I just thought it was kind of funny. Considering I go to the grocery store and I'll see a sausage made by Earl Campbell, who was a famous running, it's got his face on it. So I used an icon of myself with a chef hat and went for it. But still, there were paintings. There was in that exhibition, there was a room in the front where there was one painting that hung over a couple of chairs. It was like the business room literature about the Four Seasons. And it was nonsensical, but if anyone sat with it for a minute, they would probably be amused. I would hope so. Maybe not. Who knows? I think it was a funny exhibition because I'm in New York City, and one of the gallery's artists was standing there looking at my exhibition and going, it just made me feel kind of old, and I wasn't old. But the show was nice. I had a very good drummer. He introduced the spice on the street with a snare drum, and it was covered with a spice, and the spice flew into the wind, and it was really, really, really beautiful. But back to Joseph Kosuth. We're going to take a jump back, if you don't mind.
Yeah, please, please, yeah.
I had the pleasure of seeing him speak. I went to SVA grad, and he did, of course, he kind of, it was my first, I came out of Texas, and I was like, I started learning about art in New York.
Right.
That was a point where I saw painting, and where he told the story of, I think, showing his mother identified art as painting, so she would see a painting on the wall and it became art. And he also talked about, funny enough, that he was asked to come to the dean's office as an undergrad, and he thought he was going to get kicked out of school, and they asked him to teach. So it's a nice little story there. But anyways, I remember when I quit painting, my parents came to my studio after about a year.
You've mentioned how you moved away from painting and then came back, and can you just talk about how you know what went into your decision to kind of leave painting and return to painting?
I was in grad school, and there was a room, a floor that was full of painters, and there was a classmate who was a couple of studios down. We kind of had open studios, and he would walk around and just go pointless paint pushers, and that kind of stuck. And then also I had a good visit with Alan D'Arcangelo. You know, I told him what I was trying to do, and he basically said, well, use anything and everything to get your ideas across. And so that pretty much changed everything. Funny enough, I started working with found object kind of things. He actually lives here now. I went to school with him. He taught me how to dumpster dive and things like that in the city. So we would just go searching for things, and things would appear. I didn't really shop for anything. In other words, I just went and found it. Yeah. And I was talking to another professor, and I said, well, I quit. I mean, I thought I was quitting because I didn't want to be involved in a marketplace.
Right.
And I started making these things, and he said, well, painting is dead, so this is what's selling now. And I was like, oh, I had no idea. I mean, it didn't work out for me on that level. It's just kind of off of that. So, yeah. I mean, these were the days where, you know, Katie Nolan.
But so then at some point after that, he said, okay, I'm gonna take up painting again.
Yeah, I moved back to Dallas, and I couch surfed and found object stuff, and I found an apartment a little for years. I just started painting. I started painting in my kitchen, painting and chain smoking. I have about 15 paintings that have never been seen. They're still with me, and that's when I started again. Yeah. I kind of worked a boring job and had to drive Central Expressway, if you're familiar with that, back and forth every day, and I realized, well, I started making these paintings that were based on highwayscapes and such, and it's just information over and over and over, and I just, you know, this is kind of what I did at night.
I believe there's a lot of artists in kind of the California-ish, you know, like John Baldessari, Ed Ruscha, people who have that attitude that's maybe a little bit different from, let's say, the New York attitude. And I'm curious if you, you know, if you feel affinity for kind of the California tradition type of stuff like those artists, or if, because you did work in New York and not in California, but when I'm thinking about your work, somehow it sometimes seems to have affinities to the people on the West Coast too. I don't know if that's totally off base or what. I'm like someone coming up and saying, oh, I love your painting.
No, it's a little bit different, but that's funny. Yeah, it could be like that.
Well then, no, and so another follow-up is, I think you said a minute ago that really, I think you said something like in New York was where you really got started with these fundamental ideas about art or something that affect him. And so this was for grad school at the School of Visual Arts, but previously you'd studied undergrad here at SMU in Dallas, but that wasn't as significant ultimately as your grad school.
No, it was rather insignificant. I mean, I think things have changed, but I went 2 years and I was just uncomfortable there. I had a studio in my house. I never hung out with anybody, and there was I don't think we made it out of minimalism. So I, I was an oddball there. People actually sabotaged my paintings. Well, one painting in particular was just a really fine gesture that I did, and it was coming from such a visceral, subconscious place that I forgot about it. Yeah, moving to New York changed everything. I was very, very, very fortunate. I was fortunate to be there in the late 80s.
Yeah.
The assignments from one class were like, go see 30 shows this week. And if you said that I had a chance to go to SMU, and which would have been easier, but if you go to a student in Dallas, go see 30 shows this week, first of all, you have to find them, and then you have to survive them.
Yeah.
But in New York, it's different, and you get to see the real stage. It was the heart of the art world I went to.
Yeah.
You know, we went to a lot of openings, besides now, and I can understand that it's like showing up and having a drink and then gallery hopping and then going to Sixth Street and eating like $3 Indian foods.
Yeah.
So, but I saw the stage.
Yeah.
And this, you know, I remember being at when Jeff Koons broke out.
Yeah.
Being
yeah.
a sonoban and watching the dealers stand around bubbles.
Yeah.
And they I know what knew one dealer in particular, not well, right. I mean just face and name. But he had a look in his eyes like, this game has changed.
Yeah, yeah.
So being around that, you understand things differently. You yeah. just see them, you know. So it was a great time to be there. And I, you know, yeah. so.
Were there other than, I mean, you just mentioned Koons, but were there other particular shows that now, years later, still really stand out in your mind of things you saw at that time?
Yeah, sure. Well, I went with one of my teachers to see Katie Nolan's show.
Right, right. You
and I met Signer Action at American Fine Arts. About participant, which is, I look back at this stuff and it's kind of like, sometimes I turn on my computer and, you know, it's kind of everything, there's a certain element of disappointment in life. Found things that like are so mesmerizing. And then you realize that, like, well, I don't think it ever gets better than that. I used to think American Fine Arts was the center of the art world.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that was the only space that mattered. And it was pretty great hanging out there a little bit and showing there a little bit. Across the street was Pat Hearn, you know, they mm-hmm. were married. So that was, like, a great scene to be around. And I was, you know, I was too young for it. I was not ready. And right. I had a studio. I met Peter Naden and he came to my studio and he said, I'm going to, I didn't know, you know, I came out of here naive, or people told me in right. Dallas, show your slides. I said, that's right. how old I am. Show your slides to anybody and try to get into anything.
Yeah.
And I never messed around with that until I met him. And it was foolish. And I asked even somebody at the school, have you ever heard of American Fine Arts? It sounds kind of funny or fishy to me.
Right.
But then I got to know the scene. But I mean, I saw so many people came to our school.
Yeah.
Because I stayed with Gary Steffen, and if you don't know his work, he's making like the best paintings he's made, and he's in his 70s right now. And he was a star. He was a Mary Boone artist, so it's like funny to see him jogging with David Sally. Right. I heard, you know, David Sally came up and group was there, probably 20, 30 people, and there were kids that were heckling David Sally about it. It's just like, you know, it's weird looking back, because at the time when I was doing things in New York, living that kind of lifestyle and sleeping on my studio floor and stuff like that, it wasn't sexy. It was just like, you know, there's no reason I don't belong here, because except for, you know, I was fairly uneducated. And probably still am, but at least I started reading and seeing a lot of work, and then looking at the process and the whole dynamic. So my market, I didn't know anything about the market then. I didn't think about it or care. A piece of Katie's show that maybe sold for, I think, $36,000. So it's no wonder that she's disappeared, because, or has she? Who knows?
Yeah.
But taking yourself out of a market where people are just getting rich, you know, it's just, hey, that's where we are. That's why the art world is so different to me now. I don't even think of it as an art world anymore. I think of it as the people that go to school they actually think that there's a world that awaits them where they, like, this is a job, and it's turned into a job. But art isn't a job. It's a form of, I mean, if you don't think you're good enough, you really look inside and just think about why you do things. If you don't need to do them, you know, as an artist, you should go away, because it's cluttered. It's like people that are day trading.
Yeah.
And I think art has opened up an entire, unfortunately, a possibility for more. I mean, it's changing now. We're going to see this market go away.
Yeah.
And that's weird. That's weird. When I get depressed, I go back and read like 10 David Hammond's statements.
Right.
Like, you know, everybody was trying to be the bad guy.
Yeah.
See how it plays out.
Yeah.
I mean, he ended up so freaking rich, I imagine, which is fantastic. But
But it took a while, I guess.
It certainly took a while. And I don't think he was thinking about the future.
Yeah.
I think he was, he's a magical artist. I think a lot of people make political art, and I think it's illustration. David Hammond's works from life. It becomes political because it's so magical. It's art first. I think I heard David Sally say that in a talk. No, it wasn't. Yeah, it was David. No, it wasn't. It was Peter Halley.
Mm-hmm.
All these people came to school, like, wow. Yeah. I think, you know, I think his say would be lucky to get Jerry Jones come and give a critique. Should probably scratch that. I kid Jerry Jones.
Well, so then you mentioned before the SMU before. You...
By the way, I have to interrupt because that was a lot of name dropping. I apologize.
Duly noted. It's quite all right. We'll take care of that. Before you went to New York, you're talking a little bit about that, but then after that, at a certain point, you came to Dallas again. And it seemed, I remember from speaking to you before, it seems like there have been more recently other artists here that you've worked. I know you mentioned Jeff Dalton and Brandon Kennedy, and like it seems like there's more of a kind of critical mass of people who are doing really good work here than maybe there was. Maybe that's not the best way to put it, but you've been able to kind of have be to some degree part of a group of artists who've been pretty strong in more recent years, I think. Is that not true?
Well, they've moved on.
Yeah.
I'm sure they still practice art thinking, both of them. They're very smart guys, but right. they have real solid good jobs. So they moved.
That was a few years ago.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. That was probably 15 years ago.
Yeah.
But I mean, those were the guys I ran around with.
Right.
And then we all got married.
Right. Since Marjorie's an artist too, that's maybe more of a, you both have that you can bounce things off of or something. Or I don't know, how much do you do that or just do your own thing?
A little bit of both. Yeah. We try to, we definitely do our own thing and there's a little bit of crossover. And yeah. So in that respect, and we talk a lot, but at the same time, we have to look at each other and go, all right, well, who's going to get the real job?
Yeah.
So it's a little difficult at times. Yeah.
You talked a little bit about commercial stuff and just to describe for people who aren't familiar, there's the one exhibition where you managed to get all these things from Retta Center, and this was during the State Fair at Angstrom, or around the time of the State Fair at Angstrom Gallery, which was right there at Fair Park. And so there was the kind of commercial context of this stuff, and then there was another exhibition where with people in Shenzhen in China to send images, and then they executed paintings that were sort of replications of your work. And so when I see and think about those projects, I think, well, it's kind of like we're a little bit put off balance. I don't know if off balance is the word, but it's like there's the kind of playful, critical approach to commercial stuff, but then there's also your painting work. And is it kind of a challenge to put those things together, or do you want them to kind of be in tension with each other, or I don't know how.
Well, I've never really wanted to do a painting show, just paintings in a room to give it a space where it can, find a friend. I think one of the first, I did do a painting show in New York with just like 2 weeks after meeting somebody, and it was kind of a pop-up traveling show, and it was, he just wanted five paintings. I wanted to add a sound piece, and he kind of laughed that off. And the only way I could deal with it as a painter who doesn't do straight painting shows is look at him as a ready-made. And so he bounced the gallery in Chile, but it's true. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I don't want to be looked at as a painter. Although I think I'm a fairly decent painter, but I don't know. I really don't know, a painting exhibition one day. I mean, I rarely go and, I used to go to, when I lived in Chicago, look at this Max Beckmann painting
of
the Art Institute almost every day.
Yeah.
And I would just stare at it every day, every day, the big black lines and a cigarette. And it just left me thinking, well, I've lost that feeling and I'll never have that feeling with this painting again. So I don't know, I think painting gets in the way of living in the world, in a sense. Like, painting is the quote-unquote static object, but it's really not. I remember seeing a Morandi show. It's the first time I saw a bunch of Morandis, and I was just blown away. And I sat there, and I just rejected any kind of cool smart brain, and it was humbling.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't want to go back there, so I'm going to, like, get off the track here a little bit. Anyway.
No, no. there's no predetermined track. Okay. But let me ask then, just like at this moment, so in 2018, are there other artists that you have in mind that whose work you particularly admire, who are working right now, whose work has a lot of interest for you?
Charlene von Heil.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about...
Yeah, well, I've been making paintings, which you should see.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, for about the past, since my last show, yeah. 6 months. These paintings that I'm a little bit, some of them revisit the ones that have never been shown, that from the early 90s, so I'm being, as any narcissist would. Okay. Project-wise, well, I have some, I'm always struggling ideas.
Sure.
It's very difficult right now. I mean, just the art climate, the political climate, it was very strange. Showing these old drawings recently, just I don't know, it's difficult to think about putting things out right now in the art world as it is. But then again, given the opportunity, I would start taking more serious notes. Yeah, I have a lot of things floating around. They may be more I don't know, they may be more music related right now. Something I trying to get back into a little bit.
But there's one other thing that I wanted to ask you about your paintings, just to throw it out there. For someone, let's say someone who just comes to the museum who didn't see the whole exhibition at Conduit, but only sees the, as you said, the museum show that's on the wall right now with eight of your paintings from the same series, kind of in a sequence left to right. When I first saw your work, or I mean, even every time I see your painting, I think, wow, this is so beautiful, the colors and the kind of richness and it's so absorbing and it's so kind of, it's hard to put into words even, but it's really, as I said, really beautiful and really absorbing. But let me ask, like, is that the response that you have in mind, or is that a little off base?
That's the exact response I have in mind. I don't know what to say. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I suppose I care about painting.
Yeah.
To where I, it's hard as a painter. You don't really see things. You see everything except certain things.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not opposed to beauty. I believe in beauty. Yeah. But I also, anything I do in art, and it started in New York, it's really not about, this would probably answer the last question a little bit. It's really not about what I'm making, it's what is next to what's already been made. Oh, I'm gonna have to scratch that.
Sure.
Shit. That too.
Someday this original recording will be released as a bootleg of the kind of basement tapes.
She loves you. Yeah.
I saw it's the 50th anniversary of the White Album right now. They're coming out. They've just released some box set with all these sessions, or whatever.
That's interesting. I'm sorry I didn't answer that question. Yeah, I I'm serious about painting when I make it, and I think my paintings have gotten a little more luxurious.
Yeah,
just because I care a little bit more of them being so seductive. Yeah. I think, but it's really with my paintings, it's a tight install here, and sometimes but it's really about what's off the painting.
This is the Athenaeum Review podcast, where we talk about the ideas that shape our world. Our guest today is Ludwig Schwartz. The Athenaeum Review is produced by Creative Disturbance and the UT Dallas School of Arts and Humanities. Find out more at creativedisturbance.org.